There's a new siren call for overhauling the pay and personnel system for federal employees. You've heard that before. The Partnership for Public Service says today's civil service system is a relic of a bygone era. It says the government needs to be more attuned to the private sector. Now, already, federal labor unions are blasting the plan, which isn't officially released until about an hour from now. Ron Sanders is vice president of Booz Allen Hamilton. It published the report with the partnership, and Ron joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Emily. Good morning, Tom.
So, Ron, why look at the personnel system now? It's been in place forever.
I think that's the reason. Look, 21st century government deserves, and in fact, I would argue, demands a 21st century civil service, not one crafted in part in the 19th century and in part in the 20th. The work of the federal government has changed so dramatically, and yet we're still laboring under rules that were devised for a civil service that was comprised mainly of clerks. It's time to change. Now, look, we're not naive. We know that this report is not going to be the be-all and end-all. It's intended to light the fuse, Emily, to start a conversation, because these things will take time, but you got to start now. You can't wait for mission failure to suddenly realize, oops, we better reform the civil service.
All right, so a civil servant spends his or her life climbing up from, maybe they come in at 8 and 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. What would you do differently?
Well, let's start with that ladder. 15 grades devised in 1949 with such precise distinctions between the grades as GS-11, difficult work, GS-12, more difficult work, GS-13, really more difficult work. That's not much of an exaggeration. Those definitions are established and etched in stone, and we would collapse them and simplify them so that we don't play classification games and see the grade creep that we've seen all across government over the last couple of decades. Five levels. Entry developmental, this is what you enter. You stay a couple of years in there, progressing as you demonstrate competencies, not as you put in time. A full performance level, in effect journey level. I can do all the work required. You may need two full performance levels, one for the field, one for higher headquarters, to recognize those distinctions. Then an expert level that parallels a supervisory and managerial level. And Tom, that's important because, as we've seen with the Employee Viewpoint Survey results, leadership and management is so important to morale. And yet the general schedule system forces our best technicians, our experts, to become managers to get promoted. They don't have the aptitude. They don't have the aspiration. So we've proposed a dual track that lets the government reward its technical experts, its scientists, its tax accountants, those people who are worth far more on the front line. Don't force them to become managers. Let the people who would aspire to be actually become managers, train them, certify them, and hopefully the morale will improve.
Now, isn't there something akin to that now, like the ST?
The scientific and technical rank at the senior level is exactly what we would try to replicate at lower grades. Instead of GS 5 through 15, those five levels, but with a dual track so that as you come up the ranks, there is a fork in the road so that as a GS 13, 14, or 15, you don't have to add the word supervisory to your name or to your title to progress. You can add the adjective expert or master.
So so by doing that, you're also saying that federal employees earlier in their careers should know whether they want to go to the management track or become true specialists in whatever field they're working in.
Emily, I think this is mostly about choices. Right now, there is no choice. If you want to progress, you got to manage, you got to become an executive. You can branch at the senior level with ST, but before that, you weed out some of our very best experts because you force them to become something that they may not want to be. So this is about choice, and that choice, for the record, is not irrevocable. There's lots of on and off ramps. If you want to be an expert for a while and suddenly realize you like to lead, you can move across. This is about having that choice, not just once, but several times in your career, where now, when you reach that fork in the road, there's only one path forward.
We're speaking with Ron Sanders, vice president of Booz Allen and Hamilton, and also one of the co-authors of the new report from the Partnership for Public Service and Booz Allen. And what about the senior executive service, the above 15 people? How would that change?
Well, look, we've been talking a lot about this almost since the inception of the SES. It has become largely immobile, even though it was designed to be something quite different. Most senior executives come up agency ranks. They're born and bred and promoted all the way to the top in a single agency. Yet today, the big challenges that face our nation and our government are cross-agency in nature. They cross agencies, they cross levels of government, they cross international borders. You need executives at the very top, career executives, who could manage in that complex interagency environment, and they need to acquire the experience in doing that on the way up. Now, we're not suggesting that every single executive position have that require those competencies, but there are many. We'd estimate maybe 1,000, 1,500 that have true enterprise-wide responsibilities, federal government-wide. Maybe the folks that occupy the C-suite, for example. And we would develop those executives in a different way. To the conversation that Emily and I just had, we would give them a choice. You can come up through agency ranks. You can stay in your agency. We'd still like you to acquire some enterprise experience. But when you want to ascend into one of those top-tier enterprise positions, you're going to have to acquire and demonstrate the ability to manage in an interagency environment. And, Tom, here's the kicker. We would compensate them more. For positions at that level, managing things as complex as the implementation of the Affordable Care Act or the National Counterterrorism Center, you name it, those enterprise-wide positions, we think they ought to be paid at least up to executive level one.
So you're saying that many of the SES are underpaid?
Certainly for positions that have true interagency and interdepartmental positions, you betcha.
How did you reach these conclusions? What sort of research did you do? What sort of people did you talk to make the report?
We talked to everybody. This was over a year in the making. We convened a technical advisory group that had academic experts, former TECOs, former senior leaders in government, and a couple of folks who were very, very senior in the federal labor movement, including Bob Tobias, who'll be on with Francis, I understand, later today. They were our conscience and our GPS system. They kept us on track, but we conducted a number of forums. We interviewed every stakeholder group you can imagine, including the unions and management groups, et cetera. We even convened a session where we provided a glimpse of the draft report so people could throw rocks at it. We also looked at all of the other reform efforts to date, not just big government-wide reform efforts, but those that have occurred at the agency level. And Emily, frankly, that's one of the motivations behind the report. As the current system has become more and more decrepit, agencies have cut their own deals with Congress. They've broken out from Title V. I personally have done this in a couple of agencies myself so that they could acquire the flexibility to accomplish their mission. And so we have now a balkanized system. There are haves and have-nots. I talked to one agency had just the other day who is competing with the banking regulators who have extraordinary personnel flexibilities on one hand and the intelligence agencies who have extraordinary flexibilities on the other. And this agency is mired in Title V. They are not competing very well. So we want to raise the bar, but in so doing, raise it for everybody. So everyone has the advantage of the flexibilities that many, many agencies have acquired on their own. That's the nature of an enterprise-wide civil service system.
Now, the AFGE has criticized the report already, and setting aside the kind of ad hominem attack on Booz Allen and its motivations, we won't talk about that right now, but they say that the it would severely limit the avenues for federal employees to challenge adverse actions, and said it would understate or underplay the Federal Labor Relations Authority in favor of the Merit Systems Protection Board. What's your thinking? What was the report's thinking about challenging adverse actions, which unfortunately would take place under whatever system there is?
Well, with all due respect, I don't think the AFG quote is accurate. First of all, the report does not propose to affect the due process rights of federal employees in any way whatsoever. You still get notice, the right to reply, the right to a final decision, the right to appeal. But we have proposed a one-stop shop. How many avenues of appeal does a federal employee need? We've proposed a reconstituted MSPB that would essentially handle all individual complaints and appeals. So if you're fired, if you're demoted, if you have a concern about your manager, whatever it is, one-stop shop. MSPB has demonstrated the ability to handle those things efficiently. Now, the report does not, again, repeat, does not affect negotiated grievance procedures and arbitration. So collective bargaining agreements would remain intact. But for those things that are covered by individual complaints that are covered by EEOC, FLRA, MSPB, the alphabet soup, one way to get them adjudicated, one-stop shop, get it done quickly. And our hope is that if it, by establishing a much simpler, much more expedited system, it'll actually improve workplace justice and accountability. It won't be a mystery to employees. And it won't be a mystery to managers who are often fearful of holding employees accountable for looking at the prospect of years in litigation. So that's what we're attacking, not due process rights, but instead of having multiple fora, one stop.
I want to ask you about sort of the political will behind doing anything of this sort. The president has proposed, or he's criticized the GS system himself in the 2015 budget proposal. On the other hand, one of the things that AFG says, and there's evidence to show it's correct, is that Congress and successive administrations have basically dismissed existing law that is supposed to make sure that federal employees are paid more equivalent to the outside market, to the private market. There have been things like pay freezes and the like because of immediate budget concerns. So what sort of political will do you think there really is to do something like this?
Look, it'll take some time to build the will and the momentum. But, Emily, you just put your finger on one of the motivations for the report and for the recommendations. Have there been pay freezes? Yes. One of the reasons is that when the administration of whatever stripe says we're going to give the all federal employees a 1% or a 2% or a 3% or a no percent pay increase, that number has no credibility. The unions say it's not enough. There are lots of think tanks that will say it's too much. The experts know that it's both. A one-size-fits-all, everybody gets the same thing, pay system, is just it's bankrupt, literally, because, look, IT workers in a hyper-competitive labor market, their salaries are going up much faster than the government can keep pace with, and we're losing that competition. There are other labor categories, other occupations in the federal government where the labor market isn't hyper-competitive. So we're proposing a market-based, occupationally driven pay system that will look at the labor market for a number of benchmark occupations, like finance and accounting, like IT, et cetera, see what the private sector is paying, exercise judgment within the executive branch to set those pay rates. One size fits all just isn't going to work in today's age. And Emily, let me just add a footnote. The report only focuses on the government's two-grade interval knowledge worker workforce, professional administrative job categories. We shied away from dealing with the blue-collar system. That seems to be working reasonably well. And one grade interval GS jobs, again, we're not, the government is not lagging in the competition for jobs in those categories. It's the higher graded white collar jobs where the labor market is becoming hyper competitive, STEM jobs, IT jobs, finance jobs, acquisition jobs. Those are the ones that need to take a market-based, occupation-driven approach.
So many questions. We'll have to continue the conversation. Ron Sanders is Vice President of Booz Allen Hamilton. Thanks so much for joining us.
Tom and Emily, thanks for having me.